expecting a high of 60.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday. It's honestly provocative talk, and you're invited to join the best conversation in talk journalism. And there's a lot to talk about. Are baby drop boxes a great idea or a sign that life in America has now become somewhat disposable? Let me get into that. That is today's X poll, and I'll give you the details in just a moment. These baby drop boxes are actually a fairly common thing in many places, and now another state is adding them. I also want to tell you about the so-called Latinx leader, meaning Hispanic leader, who is not just on state advisory committees in the state of Oregon, but he's also an illegal alien and convicted of sexual crimes and failing to register as a sex offender. And yet he's working right there on public advisory committees and getting money from the state of Oregon for doing so. He's also running a nonprofit organization in which money comes into his 501c3. He is the executive director of what's being called the Latinx Recovery Center. It kind of looks like an easy way for somebody to draw a paycheck who's an illegal alien and sex offender. Let me get into that as well. And then the other detail I need to tell you about, since it's Election Day, consider this. The state of Oregon and its Department of Justice is aware of people who were illegally registered to vote in the state of Oregon and who voted in at least two different elections. And now the DOJ says, we're not going to prosecute them for the felony crimes they committed by being, number one, registered to vote, and then casting a ballot. They violated the law. They committed felony crimes, allegedly. And now the DOJ says, yeah, but we're not going to prosecute them. I'll give you the details of that, and then you tell me what we should make of a government agency that says why it's a sacred right to vote. And we have to make it as easy as we possibly can. We have to mail you a ballot. We have to make sure that everybody is registered to vote, even if they're not even old enough to vote yet. As many of you have noticed, your 16-year-old sons and daughters are getting registered to vote. And how does that happen? Well, they say under the Motor Voter Act, they can register them to vote. And then when they turn 18, they'll be ready to go out and mark a ballot. Except that Oregon wants to make it easy for illegal aliens to vote. So when they accidentally found out last year that there were a couple of thousand foreign nationals who are registered to vote, they said, yep, we could probably find more. We've decided to stop looking for them. And now it sounds like they're sending the message, and even if you go out and vote illegally, we are not going to prosecute you. Glad to have you with me. If you want to join what we've always called the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, I want to challenge you on something. You would think that if you have somebody who is serving on a state advisory committee or two or three of them, and he's also run a nonprofit organization in the state of Oregon, and he's drawing some money, some per diem for taking part in those committees, you would think if you found out he was a convicted sex offender, number one, and that he was also in America illegally and not allowed to work in any kind of job at all, and then he drew the attention of Homeland Security, you would think that would be a big story in the state of Oregon or the state of Washington, no matter where it happened. It turns out it is not. And if you don't believe me, go out and do a search for any news stories mentioning Juan Pablo Villalobos Garcia. He is a Portland area illegal Venezuelan illegal alien. He is also a convicted sex offender, and the state of Oregon thinks he is great. He was convicted just over 2 years ago in Washington County for failing to report as a sex offender, and yet he claims to be a human rights advocate. I mean, that was that makes about as much sense as back when the United Nations decided that Sudan was going to be in charge of the Human Rights Committee. I mean, it makes no sense at all. A convicted sex offender who fails to follow the law and register as a sex offender, and yet he's a human rights advocate. A sanctuary state like Oregon decided to put Mr. Villalobos Garcia on advisory committees. And I'll give you the details on that as well. But if you want to join the conversation, it's 866-439-5277. If you're a naysayer, we put naysayers right to the head of the line. Always have, always will. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com, and you can vote in our X poll. Now, this one was inspired by the fact that the state of Montana, I lived in the state of Montana a couple of times when I was a kid. It's a great state. But now the Missoula Fire Department is putting in what they call a safe haven baby box, which provides a secure and, by the way, anonymous way for parents to, as they call it, surrender a newborn. I would call it abandoning a brand new baby. Now, as long as the baby is under 30 days of age, I don't know exactly how they decide that. Maybe they check the driver's license of the baby to make sure that the baby is under 30 days old. But they've said if you have a baby and you really don't want a baby, it's easier to get rid of a baby, it turns out, in Missoula than it might be to get rid of a puppy or a kitten. While the box is being installed, the Montana Safe Haven law allows parents to legally and safely abandon a newborn at any hospital, any fire department, any police or sheriff's office, any emergency service provider, or just put the baby in the box. So I'm going to ask you the question this way. Are baby drop boxes a great idea? Some people think so. Or a sign that life in America has now become somewhat disposable? You bear a child. You bring a child into the world, and then you say, hey, this baby screams a lot, always wants to be fed. Do we really have to put up with this? No, we'll just take the baby down to the safe haven baby box, and we'll dump the baby in the box. But let me get back to Juan Pablo Villalobos Garcia. He is, as I said, the head of the Latinx Recovery Center, a 501c3. And how you get nonprofit status when you're not even legally in the United States of America. And everybody's been writing this. In fact, Homeland Security under Christy Noem posted this. It is sickening that this monster was hiding in Oregon thanks to Oregon's sanctuary policies. Juan Pablo Villalobos Garcia, a criminal illegal alien from Venezuela, was in our country on a B2 tourist visa overstay. His rap sheet includes 3 counts of sex abuse, bestiality, and failure to register as a sex offender under President Trump and Secretary Noem. If you break the law, you will face the consequences. Except guess what the consequences were? It turns out that Mr. Villalobos Garcia is a Portland area activist and educator. He served on Oregon's Community Engagement and Communications Committee to the Universal Health Plan Governance Board, which is designing a single-payer health care system for the state of Oregon for everyone, including people who have no immigration status in the United States of America. So apparently the government in Oregon decided that his point of view was going to be something that was going to be paid attention to. And then, as I told you, we'll get you more details on the illegal aliens who are registered to vote, and now the state of Oregon has decided they will not be prosecuted for committing the crime of illegally casting votes just 2 and 3 years ago in different elections. You're listening to the Lars Larsen Show and the Radio Northwest Network. You're losing.
What does Lars think about smoking the devil's lettuce?
I won't go schizo, will I?
It's a distinct possibility.
Now it's time to take a hit of Lars Larsen.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
that great moment every day, where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
While Portland Mayor Keith Wilson attempts to paint a smiley face on his once prosperous downtown, the numbers tell an entirely different story. Offices in the riot city's downtown have emptied out, and several downtown office buildings have now been sold at up to a 90% discount. Crime is still up, and violence on transit makes even coming to downtown Portland dangerous. Portland and Multnomah County coddled the drug-addicted homeless with $750 million in taxpayer money every year, and it doesn't change the situation one iota. Maybe if the mayor spent less time protecting his terrorist buddies in Antifa, who've laid siege to the ICE office that's trying to enforce America's immigration laws, the business climate might improve. And now the Business Journal reports that Portland now has the highest business taxes in America and the second highest marginal tax rate in the United States. Now Oregon faces massive new transportation taxes that Governor Tina Kotek is doing everything in her power to keep from the voters, since the polls predict that those voters will kill that new tax dead. Portland faces tough times ahead, and so-called leaders seem determined to make them even tougher. I'll get to your calls in just a moment, but a couple of things first. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. This one came in. Lars, I took my youngest son to the DMV to pay the fees and get a picture taken for his learner's permit. He brought his required paperwork and the test results. Then he showed his birth certificate. They said, here, it says you are male. Do you still identify as male? And is that what you want on your license or permit? He's a 6'1 junior in high school who does track, basketball, and forestry, and obviously a boy wearing boys' clothing and a boy's haircut. We were offended, to say the least. I want to know how they can even do that. Because you live in a very liberal state run by dimwit Democrats is the short answer. My favorite post on X today, Nick Sorter put up, the Border Patrol has captured a tren de Aragua linked illegal in Portland involved in narcotics and weapons trafficking, per DHS. Eight other Venezuelan illegals with violent convictions also captured in the raid. Yeah, turns out didn't get much coverage at all from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or anyone else. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
The Taxpayers Association of Oregon points out this past weekend utility rates rose 5% on top of a 15% gas tax hike. A Daily Grill to those who made all of that possible. It comes as Oregon's legislature passed House Bill 3991 that raises gas taxes by 15%, DMV fees by 100%, and the transit wage payroll tax by 100%. Shame on all of you for passing all of that, and shame on Tina Kotek for not letting the voters have a vote. Our best email of the day, you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. It's brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. They've done it for me. I hired them to do it, and it's beautiful. Check out CapConcreteCoatings.com or call 855-CAP-THAT. The note says, Lars, if you put this on your show, don't use my name. I'm a senior pushing 70 on a fixed income on SSI, where I have to pay for my own health insurance. With that being said, I checked my food stamps. I get $20 a month. I didn't get one penny of Tina Kotek's $5 million that she gave to the food bank. I believe that money was designated only for illegal aliens. I know a couple of seniors on food stamps. Not one of them got a penny. So where'd the $5 million go? This needs to get viral. By the way, I believe that Tina Kotek is on the cartel payroll. She's getting a kickback somehow. She needs to be investigated. She hasn't said one word about the cartel bust that happened in Salem, nor has she said anything about any drug bust that has happened in Oregon. It's very concerning how she seems to be protecting the cartel. To your calls on this Tuesday, let's go first to Jim on the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I hope I don't cut out here.
No worries.
I, with all this Democratic not prosecuting people voting illegally, isn't there anything the federal government can do I mean, I don't have much faith in the federal government at this point. All this talk about, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. But Jim, I think there is something. Trump is already telling the states, you're going to have to clean up your voter rolls. And if you don't clean up your voter rolls, we're going to cut you off from federal voting money, which comes from the federal government. He's already made that threat. And clearly, Oregon, Washington, and other liberal states do not want to play along with it. Let's go to Jim in North Bend. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. Yeah, I just wanted to call, had a little addition into the information that you had on the safe baby drop. I'm not sure about the box or what the theory is behind that, but I know in Oregon for the last 25 years or more, they refer to it as Oregon safe haven law, where you can drop a baby off within 60 days.
Not drop off, abandon a baby. Isn't that more appropriate?
Okay. I would agree with that.
Okay.
But just that it's been happening in Oregon as well, police stations, fire stations, and hospitals.
I mentioned that other states are doing it already. Montana seems to be the latest to add this on. What does it say about it? Can you get rid of a dog or cat that way by just dumping the dog in a box?
You know, it's interesting, and I looked it up a little bit while I was waiting for you, and I see that Oregon just extended it. It used to be 30 days. But Oregon extended it to 60 days in 2024.
Isn't that amazing? So you can take a baby that is 60 days old and decide, I really don't want a baby. I'll just dump it. You could put the baby up for adoption. You could volunteer the baby to foster care. You could have members of your family take care of that baby. But just abandon it in a box? That's what we're telling people, that's what life means now? Doesn't that say something about all of us, that law is on the books?
Yeah, there's a little, that's kind of never really made sense, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I've had a couple of people say, well, it's better than dumping the baby in a trash can. Yeah, it's probably better than dropping the baby in a live volcano or maybe off a cliff somewhere or throwing it on I-5. I guess there are lots of things it's better than, but how about this? How about we say that life is something special? Unless, as the state of Oregon wants to do, you have the first government on planet Earth that legalized euthanasia, meaning killing people, assisted suicide with the assistance of the state. You've got a state that invites women to bring their babies here to abort them and pays their travel expenses. I'm not exaggerating. It does that too. And then it says if you have a baby and you really don't want the baby, you can drop it off like you were dropping off old clothing at Goodwill. I think it suggests... go ahead.
It would be interesting to contact DHS and see just how many of those safe baby drops, quote unquote, happen annually.
Oh, and it would be. I don't know whether they'd give us the information. The state of Oregon and the state agencies tend not to talk to me, but it is amazing to me that you could simply say a life, a brand new baby, a human being, you can just drop the baby off if you don't want it. You don't have to even go through the process of putting it up for adoption. That, to me, is not just tragic, it's evil. And you got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland. Facebook, X, and Google may censor you, but you'll never find censorship here.
Don't censor me!
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to be taking your phone calls and your emails and talking about the issues of the Pacific Northwest. You know, federal authorities, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, have arrested multiple Venezuelan nationals tied to narcotics and weapons trafficking and violent crime. So, why did they come to the Pacific Northwest? My suggestion would be they realized that with sanctuary states like Oregon and Washington, that this would be a friendly place where they'd be able to escape much attention from law enforcement. Thank goodness that Border Patrol and ICE decided to take them down, because you certainly weren't going to get any help from the local cops in the Northwest. David Medina has been covering this. He's a Portland-based conservative influencer, a grassroots leader, and the founder of Project Libertas. Hey, David, welcome back.
Hey, Laura, thanks for having me again.
Not a problem. Should people be surprised that this got almost zero attention from any of the major media, even though it has all the hallmarks that you would expect in a really big deal story? You've got major narcotics and weapons traffickers from a notorious country like Venezuela. They're captured in the Pacific Northwest. And my check around to the, you know, local newspapers, online sites, TV, and the rest, they paid almost no attention to it at all, unless I missed it. Did you?
You know, Lars, I know you say there's drug traffickers, and I know you know this, but first of all, I don't even know how you and I keep our heads with the Democrats and what they're doing to this state and what they're doing to other blue states across America. We're not just talking about drug traffickers. We're not just talking about these Venezuelan gangs. These are a transnational terrorist organization that the U.S. government has designated. These guys started in a prison in Venezuela, and their main business model includes murder, kidnapping, illegal mining, extortion, you name it, money laundering. And they're operating right under our nose here in Portland, Oregon. You know, I was on the phone with, or I was texting back and forth with the Homeland Security investigator here in the for the Portland area. And, he says he's going to have something for us here in a couple weeks. But, he's one of those guys that just can't believe that the Democrat Party is allowing these people to operate in our communities. And you never hear the media talk about it. You never hear Democrats talk about it. You only hear about their compassion and everything that Orange Man is doing wrong.
Well, and you know what? I mean, there are times where I want Trump to do things that are even more radical. I mean, I saw him on 60 Minutes Same. Last night, and they said, have you gone too far with this? And he said, no, we haven't gone nearly far enough. If the law enforcement agencies that are taking down the vast majority of the drug traffickers, the human traffickers, and everyone else, what would happen if the federal government said, okay, you don't like our people there? You're gonna harass us as state agencies in both Oregon and Washington. You're gonna allow other people to harass our people and dox them out. Tell you what, why don't we pull back for a few weeks and see what happens? Can you imagine what the result would be? Because you've had all these people, the mayors of Portland, Seattle, the governors of Oregon and Washington, saying, we don't want the federal government here. Okay, fine. We'll pull the U.S. Marshals out. We'll pull the FBI out. We'll pull ICE and CBP out. And we'll wait a few weeks. And we'll see how long it is before you come crawling back to us, begging us to come back in. Because I swear, for the last couple of years, even during Biden, the only folks who are busting the drug trafficking, the human trafficking, and everything else has been the federal government. State government doesn't do anything about it. And these people really are truly a terrorist organization. And they operate even with the federal government here, without the federal government to be on top of them. Can you imagine what they do since local police have been told, leave them alone?
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point, Lars, is, you know, what would happen if the federal government just said, okay, if President Trump was like, okay, you guys can, have it all to yourselves. And but I think that's two things there, Lars. Is one, I think it's a testament to President Trump and his administration and their dedication to the American people. You know, I tell people this all the time. Portland, Oregon is still America. This is still the United States of America. I don't care what corrupt politician or Angelita Murillo or Keith Wilson. I don't care. Tina Kotek. I don't care who's in charge. This is still the United States of America. And I think that President Trump, I don't think you ever see that from them, because they know there are good people here and good patriots here. They wouldn't abandon us like that. But also, Lars, I think secretly the Democrats love it. What Trump is doing, I think they love that he got reelected, because it gives the Oregon Democrats and other Democrats in the Northwest something to run on, because they have nothing to run on in the 2026 election besides their own failed record. So it's easy to deflect and point to, we're protecting you from a dictator in Donald Trump.
Except, what are they protecting us from? The arrest of Trende Aragua terrorist organization members? The arrest of drug dealers? I mean, the amount of drugs and weapons and bad guys that they've been arresting nationwide, I think the drug total is now 90 tons of drugs. And I would hope that every mom and dad, every grandma and grandpa out there would think, of those 90 tons, a few milligrams of one of those 90 tons would have killed a member of my family. Except I don't think people are necessarily seeing it that way personally until that death comes to their doorstep.
Absolutely. And I think it's a tragedy. When you really look up these Trende Aragua terrorists, Lars, and how they operate and what their business model is built on, it's really scary that these people, I mean, we not only heard about, you know, this arrest just last night or just this month with the, you know, with the eight other illegals, but we also heard, you know, remember that Lake Oswego, that Medicaid fraud case that's tied to Trinidad Aragua. They are deeply, they're not just here in Oregon, Lars. You know this. They are deeply embedded in Oregon. They are taking advantage of our system. They are making our streets less safe, and the Democrats cover for them every single chance they get. In the name of the disguise of compassion and, you know, run, or protecting us against a dictator. It's disgusting.
Do you remember the woman who got the drill, the hole drilled in her hand? And she was victimized by three bad guys from Lake Oswego. They were living in one of the most toney neighborhoods in the Pacific Northwest. And they go on a run to Seattle. They find a woman who comes home late, lives alone, and they decide, let's rob her of her jewelry, and then we'll get her PIN number for her ATM card. We'll take her to the ATM, and if she doesn't give us the PIN, they took a drill. They took a, an electric drill and drilled a hole in her hand. And we know how this happened because then they took her off to a remote place, shot her, and thought they had killed her, dumped her by the side of the road. She managed to survive all of that so she could tell the tale. And you say, this is the kind of tactics. These are the kind of people you're dealing with. And then you have local law enforcement, most of it, maybe not Sheriff Swank in Pierce County, but most of the rest of these jokers say, yep, our politicians have told us we're to be hands off on illegal aliens, and they're following those orders.
Absolutely. And, you know, one last thing, Lars, real quickly, is Secretary Noem said that, you know, the doxing of ICE agents are up 700%, much of it centered in Portland. And so it doesn't just put our people at risk. It puts our law enforcement who are trying to protect the people at risk. You know, federal, you know, there was federal officials warning that, you know, Trinidad Aragua were going to use these doxing tactics from Antifa and doxing tactics from these far leftists to target law enforcement. That's why they've kind of designated them as a terrorist organization. So what the Democrats are doing, they should never win an election here again in Oregon, but they have so many of their voters that are hypnotized by Orange Man that they're willing to overlook the danger that the Democrats are bringing to our communities.
No, it's unbelievable. And frankly, there was a story running today that in the Northwest, a woman was following ICE around and taking their pictures. Now, you remember when Oregon and Washington got very wound up about the idea that stalking was illegal? And why? Because you're threatening somebody's life or safety. And yet, apparently, stalking ICE or stalking CBP or stalking the federal marshals, that's completely legitimate. And so they put up they pitch a fit when this woman gets arrested because she's driving her fiance's government plate car and following ICE around and taking their pictures as a way of to try to intimidate them out of enforcing the law. And you're right. President Trump is not going to give up on Americans. He took an oath to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. He's doing it. I could say a whole lot less about the public officials like the governors and the mayors and the other city officials in Portland and Seattle. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The risks and rewards of remote work.
Where are you now?
I'm sitting in my office.
I doubt that.
Why would you doubt that?
If you were in your office right now, we'd be having this conversation face to face.
At least woke progressives won't stop you from listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and always glad to welcome back Don Benton, Managing Director of National Consulting Services, a former Washington State Senator, former Senior Advisor to President Trump, and for a time Director of the U.S. Selective Service. Don, welcome back to the program.
Hello, Lars. It's always good to be on with you. You sound great as usual.
Well, thank you for the fine compliment. By the way, today's election day, and you wanted to give a final reminder to people to get their ballots marked and get them in.
Well, it's a situation where I don't think most people are aware. Clark County government has a chance to remake itself every 5 years, and this is the year they do it. They elect Clark County Charter Review Commissioners. These folks are just citizens like you and me. They don't get paid a thing, and they serve us for 1 year in restructuring government, making changes to the local government that they think are better. Obviously, depending on who you put in those spots, is going to determine what kind of, you know, amendments you get for your local government. Last time they tried to push through ranked choice voting, which we know is a terrible thing.
Yeah,
voters stopped that at the ballot box. They tried to push through a special department for equity and inclusion. The voters stopped that at the ballot box, thank goodness. But if we don't put the right people on the commission, you're going to get these same kinds of proposals over and over again. It'll be just like the I-5 bridge. They just keep coming back with this light rail. Even though we've said no, and the legislature said no, and everybody said no, and no, and no, they just keep coming back. They won't let the citizens make the decision. They keep trying to shove it down our throats. And so today is the last day Clark County citizens are going to have to make a difference in that whole charter review selection process.
Now, look, do you have a pick for who you think would make good charter review, charter commission candidates?
I do. We've created a political action committee called Common Sense Government. Several small businesses have joined with us, and we have endorsed charter review candidates in each of the 5 county districts.
Where can people find that, Don?
They can find that. In fact, the Clark County Republican Party has endorsed almost the same list, and they've got a great web page for it, clarkrepublicans.org. Clark, Republicans.org.
Hey, I want to ask you something. Let me ask, do you trust the current election system right now? Because I don't.
No, anybody that understands how it works would tell you that it's a complete fraud. In the last election I was deeply involved in, which was just a year ago, in Clark County, we had over 1,000 people vote in the 18th district that don't even live in the 18th district. Not only that, they notified the post office that they didn't live there anymore, and they would like to have their ballot moved. That's an official notification of a government agency, yet the Clark County auditor still counted those ballots illegally. So, no, we've got a serious problem with elections in this county.
And by the way, Donald Trump, who both you and I support, has said through the federal government, I want all these states to clean up their voter rolls. Judicial Watch has sued Los Angeles successfully. He's now Judicial Watch is suing Oregon, saying you've got notoriously dirty voter rolls. You've got more registered voters than you do citizens of voting age. The system is flawed. And just today, I told my audience that the Department of Justice in Oregon said, yeah, we know we caught some people who were illegal aliens who are registered to vote because of the flawed system in Oregon, and they voted in elections, but no, we're not going to prosecute them. And it wasn't long ago, maybe a year ago, that Tony Golick, this joker who's the prosecutor in Clark County, said, yeah, we've got a woman who confessed to illegally voting, said she knew what she was doing, knew it was illegal, she did it anyway, and he's not going to prosecute her. I mean, I don't see
they
any reason to trust the system.
You have to prosecute these people when they break the law. It's no different than somebody stealing stuff out of the 7-Eleven store. If you don't prosecute them, you're going to get more of it. And it'll get bolder and bolder and bolder. And the enemy has already figured out how to harvest these ballots that never get voted by the real voter.
Yep.
They did that last year in the 18th district, over 1,000 of them. They knew they weren't going to vote.
But they did anyway. Hey, Ed, Don, thanks so much. And if you missed that link, we'll get it for you. Send me an email, talk@LarsLarson.com. Matt Bumula joins me now with the GOP. Matt, what's the message you've got for voters today?
Hey, Lars, thanks for having me on. Well, Don Benton, thank you so much for putting up a lot of stuff I was going to say. Our good friend Don brought up some good points about what's going on with our charter commission. This only happens every 5 years. A lot of citizens don't know about it. And we have a good opportunity to really have a voice on that commission. 5 years ago, we only had one Republican on the entire commission. So we put a lot of time and effort as a party into endorsing a slate of candidates. Like you said, you can go to clarkrepublicans.org and see that slate of candidates. And we're there to fight against, you know, of course, the ranked choice voting that 7 of the Democrats that are running as candidates for the Charter Review Commission are saying they're for. They're saying that they're behind. But it's so important for public safety, low taxes, affordable housing, and dealing with the vagrancy that we have to keep Vancouver from becoming Portland 2.0. So that
and the place to go is clarkrepublicans.org. That's clarkrepublicans.org. Back in a moment. Glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866. Hey, Lars. Send emails to talk@larslarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Live. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Well, I guess the Walmart riots didn't happen over the weekend when the SNAP benefits failed to materialize for most of the people who are holding food stamp cards. But now a bunch of dimwit Democrats are up on Capitol Hill and they're actually holding a live press conference today and they're talking about SNAP benefits. It's just it almost seems comical to me that they're not standing there saying, gosh, if there were only something the Democrat Party could do up here on Capitol Hill that would make those SNAP benefits appear on cards again. Well, there is something, by the way. You could talk to your friends over in the Senate and tell about six of them to show up and vote yes on a status quo budget, and all the SNAP benefits go back into operation. All the air traffic controllers go back to work and they get paychecks. In other words, good things could happen, and you, the Democrats, hold all the cards. Except the Democrats are trying their best to try to blame Donald Trump. And from that, bring it back to Portland. A federal judge last night has now once again blocked the Trump administration from deploying the National Guard to multiple states to Oregon, an injunction issued by Karen Immergut. And it sounds like by the end of the week, she might actually issue a permanent injunction, which I would hope that the Ninth Circuit's Court of Appeals would come back and say, the president has the authority to call up the National Guard. He has the authority to send the National Guard to states over the objection of people in those states. The same kind of thing happened under President Kennedy. It happened under President Johnson. It happened under President Eisenhower. And the reason I reach back to those three examples, in all three of those, the military was sent to a state that said, we don't want the military here. We reject the idea of the military here. We will call our own shots. Except the Democrats don't want to bring that up. I wish the Republicans would bring it up more often. Eisenhower sent the 101st Airborne to Arkansas. And why? Because the state of Arkansas said black and brown kids cannot go to school with our white kids. Keep them away. And President Eisenhower, because he understood his oath of office the way Donald Trump understands the oath of office, to faithfully execute the laws of the United States. And what did he do? He said, if the state of Arkansas is not going to cooperate, I'm sending the 101st Airborne. Now, would you imagine that back then there were a bunch of Democrats who said, you can't send the military here and tell us what to do and enforce federal law? Of course they did. They complained up a storm, and it didn't do any good because Americans understood the president's obligation to the state of Arkansas, in the case of Kennedy, to James Meredith, who wanted to go to college in Mississippi. And they said a black guy can't go to college in our white college campus. And the same kind of thing happened in Alabama. And President Johnson, another Democrat, said, no, we're going to send the National Guard. And yet you've got knuckleheads now who run the states of Oregon and Washington who say we reject this idea. So the federal judge once again has temporarily blocked the Trump administration. It'll probably turn into a permanent injunction and then it'll go to the Ninth Circuit's court. Glad to have you with me. Always glad to take your calls. And thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. This segment of the show brought to you by 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Our X poll today, are baby drop boxes, one, a great idea, or two, a sign that life in America is now disposable? I vote that it sends the message that life is disposable. And I think it's a terrible idea, and I've got a naysayer on board. David, we love naysayers on this program. Thanks for calling. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
Hey, Lars, I love your show. Don't get me wrong, but I have to strongly disagree. You might encourage more people to use the baby drop box, and you're going to get some people to use it that are going to do horrible things to a baby and put them in deadly situations. But if you actually save a few lives, because these people that may end up killing their babies or putting them in really horrible situations may be afraid to use a drop box because they don't want to get arrested, they may end up being killed or die. So I think it's really actually a good idea, even though it's a horrible thing to have happen. I think it's good because you will save some babies' lives.
Can I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
Okay. If you decide to bear a child, do you have a responsibility to the child?
100%.
Okay, except if you tell somebody, if you don't like it, just drop it in a box. That doesn't suggest much responsibility. If you said instead, and I had a woman who was, you know, sending me emails saying, this is outrageous, a 16-year-old who's pregnant doesn't know what to do. Now, I think she's underestimating the 16-year-old, but there are lots and lots of pregnancy resource centers, and that's all they do. They will tell a young lady who is expecting, they'll say to her, so you don't think you've got the resources or the wherewithal or the courage or whatever it takes to raise the baby. Okay, we can help you find a home for that baby. We can find an adoptive family. We can find foster parents. We can find care for that child. We'll help you. We'll hold your hand through the whole process, except you have to actually go through the process, which isn't much. It's just saying, I don't think I've got what it takes to take care of this child. And they say, we understand. We have generous donors. We're not taxpayer funded. We will help you find a home, a proper home for that child. But it requires you just to take a tiny amount of responsibility, not just dump the baby in a box and say, okay, I'm done with it, but actually walk through the process. If we send the message that a baby can be disposed of more easily than a dog or a cat, then what message are we sending? We're saying you don't have to bother with all that. You don't really have any responsibility to that child. Just drop it in a box and be done with it. Isn't that a horrible message to send, as opposed to saying we'll make it easy for you to give up that child for adoption, but we're not going to tell you can discard it like a piece of garbage you drop in a trash can downtown?
Yeah, 100% agree. I have to say, I would hope to say that any baby who gets dropped off in a box, we're talking about a fire station or somewhere, not just out in the woods, what I'm assuming.
No, it's at any emergency service location. But I'm not worried about, here's the thing. I know they'll check the box. I think all of those places will do right by the baby. But we're sending a message that says babies are disposable. That's the part of it that I'm worried about. And there are alternatives, which are pregnancy resource center, ask your family for help, ask a medical professional for help, but at least treat the baby as though I have to hand off this responsibility. I mean, do you have kids?
Absolutely, three kids.
Have you ever had some other member of the family take care of them?
No, actually not.
Never? You've never had another family member like your mom or your mother-in-law come over and take care of the kids? Never?
Oh, yes. When I went to school, my mom did, yes.
If you were late for school, would you say, you know what, the kids will be fine. I'll just take off. Mom will be here in 15 or 20 minutes. Did you ever do that?
No.
Why not? I mean, you knew mom was coming, and you knew she was going to be there.
Yeah.
You just leave them. I mean, your house is just a big box. You just leave them there, and somebody would take care of your responsibility. You waited, and you handed that responsibility off, and I knew that's what you did. David, thank you. Good call.
Are you experiencing technical difficulties?
That electrician must be a Democrat.
No technical difficulties here. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I knew that this was going to raise some cane with some people. The idea that baby drop boxes are this wonderful idea. And it's always posited that the alternative to having a box outside a fire station or a police station or a sheriff's department or a hospital where you can just dispose of your baby and somebody will come along and take care of the baby in a timely fashion, let's hope, that this is better than the dumpster. It is better than simply dumping the baby out of a car like you might with a dog you don't want and you're somebody who's that evil, because there are people who take a dog out to the countryside and just kick the dog out of the car. And they know the dog won't find its way back to your house, but it'll end up at somebody's house, and that's okay. So I've asked you, are baby drop boxes a great idea or a sign that life in America is now disposable? I would go for the latter rather than the former. The Missoula Fire Department in Missoula, Montana, is now in the process of installing what they call a safe haven baby box that provides a secure and anonymous way for parents to, they say, surrender a newborn. I would say abandon a newborn as long as it's under 30 days of age. And I don't know how they determine that. But I get naysayers on this. Dan is one. Dan, thanks for the call. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
Well, first of all, I just want to tell you that I agree with 99% of what you say. I'm all the way in Connecticut. But on this one thing here, I have a baby. We adopted, my wife and I. We tried for years. We went to another country for fertility. Long story short, in private adoption is all about money. It's very sickening. So we went through the state of Connecticut, and 2 years ago, there was a one-year-old baby, little towhead, healthy, that they dropped off. It's called Safe Haven. Ironically, I'm doing a project at the police station of the same town, so now I'm hearing the horror stories of what happens when either people that get pregnant, or we believe it's a younger girl. There's no contact. It was just, like I said, it was a drop-off.
Yep.
Anyway, I know what time is of the essence, but there's so many instances that, you know, these police officers that have to go on these calls and find a baby in a dumpster, it's unfortunate. And I just think your faith in humanity, at least in the United States anyway, is just a little short, because not too many people are religious. And hopefully that's going to change with, you know, President Trump.
Yeah, let's hope that changes. But Dan, it's always positive. The alternative is dumpster or baby box. And I don't see it as that simple. Because I've said to people, in fact, a number of people have said, well, a 16-year-old girl has no option. I said, well, she delivered the baby, which means that, you know, yep, she delivered the baby and the baby is alive and well, maybe one day old, maybe 28 days old, but it's less than 30 days old, drop it in the box. Well, at that point, even whether it's one day or 30 days, why not go to a pregnancy resource center and actually hand the baby off? Because most adults would say, you have a responsibility to that baby. You say, well, my responsibility is drop it in a box and somebody else will take care of it. Or your responsibility is go to a pregnancy resource center, which ought to be, I mean, in the 4 years of Biden, they got firebombed. There were arsons. There was vandalism. There were physical attacks. And Joe Biden's FBI did almost nothing about them, even though that's the next step. And if you say, well, what's the difference between dropping a baby in a box and saying somebody will take care of it, or going to a pregnancy resource center and say, look, I've just found myself overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. I don't have the money. I don't have the resources. I can't deal with this. And the pregnancy resource center says, we will walk you through the whole process. You'll give the baby up for adoption. You'll know that it's going to a safe family. In other words, it's reassuring for the mother, this young mother, even if you assume it's a very young mother, and it may well be, but it's also reassuring for the parents that this wasn't just a baby that was abandoned somewhere, but it was actually put in the hands of somebody responsible. And when you did that handoff is when your responsibility transferred, not just drop it in a box, because I think that says some awful things about our society. But that's my take on it, Dan. It's my honest take on it.
And you're right. The only problem is there's not enough education out there or information that these young mothers know about to do that. And they also, you know, a lot of them, and we've had, you know, people that we've known that their daughters have gotten pregnant And they're so scared of what their father's going to do because they live in, I mean, we live in a very nice area, and it's not something that's known.
Dan. Now you're talking about something different, because the young lady who's pregnant and nobody knows yet, and she's afraid dad's going to find out. This is the young lady who's carried the baby to term and actually delivered it sometime later. So if we're only talking about the baby box babies, we're talking about one where you've already gone through the whole process. And I'm sure there are some young ladies who could conceal a full-term pregnancy, probably not a lot of them. But that's a whole different case. If you say, I'm pregnant, I don't know what I'm going to do, my dad is going to be very angry at me, my family may be angry at me too, that's different. The baby box doesn't address that at all, does it?
I don't, quite honestly, I just caught your show. I left work, and usually I catch it earlier, but I don't know exactly what the baby box is. I'm assuming
the baby box is you have delivered a baby. The baby is capable, and it's not a preemie, because otherwise you drop the preemie in the baby box. Yeah. It's probably in the neonatal intensive care unit of the hospital. So you're talking about a full-term baby, and you've said, I'm the mom. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have the financial resources. I don't have I don't have a boyfriend or a husband to help me share this burden. I'm overwhelmed. I can't sleep. I don't have any food for the baby. All those things. So you say, I'll just drop the baby in a box, or go to a pregnancy resource center or any of those other institutions. You walk into the hospital and say, hi, I can't handle the baby. Could you take it? Well, the same hospital that will take the baby out of the box anonymously would also take the baby from the mom. So would the fire station, except we're disconnecting it by saying, you really don't have any responsibility for this child at all, other than place it in a box and drive away or walk away, and your responsibility is over. That's the part that bothers me. Because we're saying as a society, that's an okay way to dispose of a baby.
Now, I know, but like the first caller said, and the way I look at it is, and the way I think maybe you could step back and look at it is, it will save lives. I don't think it's going to increase. Like, well, you know what? We're going to be reckless. It's more of it's going to save babies' lives and put the baby into loving arms like my wife and
so,
I.
So, Dan, hold on. Take the baby box out of the equation. We're about a minute from the break. The mom, instead, there's no baby box. You make that disappear for 2 seconds. The mom walks into a hospital and said, I am overwhelmed. I cannot handle being a mom. I don't know how to care for this baby. I don't have the money. I don't have the time. I don't have the anything to be able to, whatever the problem is, and you hand the baby to the hospital. Tell me the hospital wouldn't care for that baby, or do they have to receive it anonymously to properly care for the baby? It's like the box makes all the difference. Does it?
You're right. I can't speak. I just don't have enough information to speak intelligently about it. All I know is that I just believe that there's so many people that are scared, or they're scared of the consequences of their actions, and they're going to get in trouble. That's how I believe. They don't want to even deal with it. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't want to deal with it.
Have you noticed that there's that problem in society right now, that people just don't want to deal with stuff? Your family member's hooked on fentanyl. He's living in a cardboard box down on, you know, on some street. He's homeless. Yeah, I don't want to deal with it. Oh, my mom is mentally ill. She's got dementia. I don't want to deal with it. I mean, are we really going to become the I don't want to deal with it? Dan, you made some great comments, but are we really going to become a society that says, if you just don't want to deal with something, just drop it in a box and the problem is solved? That is sick.
The Lars Larson Show. Everyone's favorite color is gold.
I can proudly proclaim that the golden age of America is upon us.
Sit back and enjoy. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And we call this Honestly Provocative Talk Radio. And occasionally I provoke people. And I guess I did today by positing an ex-poll question. We put up a brand new poll question every day, and I think it relates to this. Our poll question today, because there's another state of Montana, in which they are installing safe haven baby boxes, and I said, are they a great idea or a sign that life in America is now disposable? And I would argue that baby boxes are a sign that it's disposable and that you should be able to anonymously get rid of a baby and just abandon it somewhere. As long as the baby ends up alive, everybody's happy. I disagree with that point of view. It's society saying, it's okay if you have a baby just to, you know, dump it somewhere. You don't even have to walk through the process of putting it up for adoption, making sure it's in safe hands or anything like that. Well, there's a brand new film out that shows how the founder of Planned Parenthood promoted racist ideas about controlling who gets to have babies. So I thought we'd talk with Seth Gruber, who's the founder and CEO of the White Rose Resistance and the man behind the 1916 Project. Seth, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Lars.
Now, I saw a linkage between those two subjects, and I've got a lot of people mad at me today because I don't like the idea that we are starting to treat life like it's disposable. But that idea was one that Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, promoted heavily more than, just over 100 years ago.
That's right. I mean, listen, we're living in a culture of death, right, Lars? And it's horrible to have to call it that, but that's exactly what it is. And those who murder the unborn, by the way, cannot be trusted to govern the born. And you know, people always like to tell me, like, you know, so you make too much of the abortion issue, Seth. You know, you're sensationalist rhetoric that's blowing it out of proportion. What are you talking about? People who actually believe that through point of birth, and now there's all this, you know, legislation the Dems have pushed, trying to basically, like, not make it a crime to, like, oops, I just killed my infant after birth, fourth trimester abortions that they're totally behind. People who will celebrate that as a blessing of liberty, as a quote-unquote right, as bodily autonomy, what were they chanting when Roe v. Wade got overturned, Lars? Without this basic right, women can't be free. Abortion on demand and without apology. Yeah, okay, so if you have believed that you're not even free unless you could slay your children in the womb, then those who stand against that become what? I guess fascists. We become the enemies of freedom. So pro-lifers are the threat to our democracy.
They're the deniers of civil rights to half the population, right? They're saying you are denying the civil right, except the Supreme Court sensibly decided, no, nothing in the Constitution says that you have a right to this.
Right.
And they handed it off to the states, and some of the states have done right by it, and some have not. But how is it that the entire society has forgotten about Margaret Sanger and about the origins of the whole idea of Planned Parenthood, as though, yeah, we don't talk a lot about that. Like, I mean, Hillary Clinton got the Margaret Sanger Award, what, a decade ago or so? Maybe a little
so
bit more,
Pelosi.
A little bit less than that?
Right, Lars. Yeah. So did Pelosi. No, you're exactly right. Well, I mean, listen, the left has done a very good job of curating and managing the legacy and history of Margaret Sanger, who they used to call the patron saint of feminism, by the way, Lars, and the history of Planned Parenthood. And when you study the origins, because I do this, I'm an intellectual ADHD homeschool kid, which means like I wasn't reading gay porn and Kinsey, you know, I was actually like learning stuff and stuff like that in Los Angeles as a kid. And so like when you read the early stuff from the early sexual revolutionaries, even like mainstream leftist Democrats from what, like the 1920s, 30s, 40s, the coverage of who Sanger was, what she believed, what she said, it was pretty honest. And then over the decades, the more disturbing rough edges of who she was, what she believed in the organization that she founded, those start to disappear from the biographies and the coverage. And so I went down the rabbit hole, to borrow a phrase, and we're exposing so much of what's been hidden. I'll give you one example, Lars, because I know we don't have much time together. But listen, the founding board member of Planned Parenthood, that's right, founding board member, before it was called Planned Parenthood, it was called the American Birth Control League, Lothrop Stoddard. Guess who the founding board member of Planned Parenthood was? He was the exalted cyclops of the Massachusetts KKK chapter. Okay, pause for impact. Wait, what the heck? Why did I never know that? And he was invited by the Nazis in 1939 to the Third Reich. He met with Fritz Sauckel, Robert Ley, Heinrich Himmler. Oh, and a brief meeting with Adolf Hitler. He's the only American I've found who had a one-on-one meeting with Adolf Hitler face-to-face in the Third Reich after Hitler rose to power. And they had translated his books into German for a lot of the German schools. I could talk to this for a long time, but he sat on that board for years and was not removed. She launched the Negro Project in 1939, and then she had to change the name of her organization to Planned Parenthood in 1942, Lars, because the Nazis had given the phrase eugenics a slightly negative connotation.
Bad order. I mean, this is no, but here's the funny thing is, Seth, in modern American politics, the thing they call Trump more than anything else and anybody who supports him, and that would include me,
yes,
is they
so
say,
ironic.
Well, you're a Nazi. And I say, no, I'm not a member of the Socialist, National Socialist. That would
National
be
Socialist.
That would be Zoran Mamdani, the man who will probably become the mayor of New York today. he's a socialist.
Nailed it, Lars.
But then, yeah. Having said that Nazi is the biggest scarlet letter you can lay on an American politician today, you say, well, where did he get his most evil ideas, like eugenics and eliminating, you know, useless eaters or undesirables or whatever? Well, he got them from Sanger, not the other way around, because she preceded
him. Oh, and all her friends. Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story, Lars. Your listeners will trip out on this one. So Leon Whitney was the executive secretary for Madison Grant. Madison Grant was the president, I think founder of the American Eugenics Society. Madison Grant got into this a few years before that, Lars, for funding. What did he fund? Oh, that's right. He put Oda Benga, a black African human being, in a cage with a monkey at the New York City Bronx Zoo to, quote, illustrate evolution. So that's how he got started. And he's now running the American Eugenics Society. And he wrote a book in 1916, same year Sanger opened her first birth control clinic, which was quite shocking. Anyways, Leon Whitney's meeting with Sanger over coffee one time in New York City, trying to convince Margaret Sanger to merge the Planned Parenthood magazine, the Birth Control Review, with the American Eugenics Society's magazine, because Leon Whitney's like, we're doing the same work. One day, Leon Whitney gets a letter from a German corporal recently out of prison and rising in the German political scene, thanking Leon Whitney for his book, Selective Sterilization. And so Leon Whitney runs over, interrupts the committee meeting. I'll cite this in my book, Lars. I can prove all this. And he interrupts his boss, Madison Grant. And he says, Madison, our writings are influencing the Germans. And Madison Grant pauses, smiles, and chuckles, and pulls out his own letter he had just received from the same German corporal recently out of prison and rising in the German political scene, thanking Madison Grant for his book on eugenics and calling Madison Grant's book his Bible. The man who wrote those letters was named Adolf Hitler. And Madison Grant was a financier, funder, friend, advisor to Margaret Sanger. In fact, when she launched Planned Parenthood, Lars, check this out, she shared office spaces with Madison Grant's organization, the American Eugenics Society.
By the way, the movie is called The 1916 Project, and book as well. Its author is Seth Gruber, founder and CEO of the White Rose Resistance. And this is the crazy thing. Where did Sanger put all of her, you know, Planned Parenthood clinics, or what would become Planned Parenthood? She put them in predominantly black neighborhoods. Why? Because her plan was to eliminate the black population. And where are most of them still today? In the predominantly black neighborhoods of big American cities. Am I wrong?
No, that's right, brother. And listen, the left has tried to obviously talk about it with my buddy Michael Knowles on his show, because, you know, he made the point, like, people say, like, Sanger, she was trying to say, we don't want people to misconstrue what we're doing as racist. And that's what that famous quote meant. We do not want word to get out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. Sorry, New York Times, they confirmed that was a quote. But what she meant, New York liberals, is we don't want what we're doing to be accidentally misconstrued as racist. Well, Lars, how about this? Here's the opening proposal paragraph, two sentences, of the Negro Project, launched in 1939 by Margaret Sanger. Quote, the mass of Negroes, particularly in the South, they're still breeding carelessly and disastrously, with the result that the increase among Negroes, even more than among whites, is from that portion of the population least intelligent and least fit.
Unbelievable. That's Seth Gruber from the 1916 Project. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Lars, daily question to all the Dems in our government.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Now, the one with the brain, Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. All these stories that are not getting attention from most of the media in the Pacific Northwest, it kind of confuses me. Because you'd think these stories would be major stories. So Oregon Senate Republicans posted this just a little while ago. It is disgusting that somebody convicted of sexual abuse and bestiality was advising the state of Oregon on health policy, handpicked and celebrated by Democrat politicians. If that doesn't show how twisted priorities in Salem are, nothing does. They're talking about the Latinx Oregon policy advisor that I talked about at the top of the show. And I told you, they know his name. They know he was illegally in the United States. They know that he was convicted of sexual crimes and bestiality. Juan Pablo Villalobos Garcia and living out there, I guess, in Hillsboro, and running a private nonprofit called the Latinx Recovery Center and serving on state health advisory boards to the governor. And they thought it was just perfectly good that he was involved in that. Glad to have you with me, and always glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. This segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Details. Let's go to Sue, who is a naysayer. Hey, Sue, we love naysayers. Thanks for calling. What do you and I disagree about?
Hi, Lars. I'm a longtime listener, and I really love your show, but sometimes I do disagree. And one of those times is now with the baby box, drop box from Missoula.
Yeah.
One of the things I haven't heard anybody talk about is the fact that hormones play a huge role when you're pregnant. You've got huge amounts of
estrogen.
Estrogen and
progesterone and things like that. I don't know enough biology to actually comment wise on that, but I know there's a lot of hormones going on. You're right.
And then as soon as the baby is born, those hormone levels just drop dramatically. And these shifts really play havoc with women. I would bet there's also other hormones for lactation and other things, but these women, I don't think most people even know that's what's going on with their bodies. And some women can't handle it. They have their cortisol levels go up, and they go crazy. Some women actually go crazy. They can sit in the corner of the house and rock back and forth so they can't hear the baby with their hands over their heads, because this is just something too much for them to handle. And a lot of people don't understand
it. I think I reflected that in the comments, Sue. I said a woman finds herself with a brand new baby, less than 30 days old, but born, you know, already delivered, and apparently able to live on the baby on his or her own, not in a neonatal intensive care unit. And they say, what should I do with this? I'm overwhelmed. What would be wrong with saying you should walk into any hospital, any police station, any fire station, hand the baby off to a person? But instead, we want to give them the anonymity of just dropping in a box, which seems incredibly inhumane.
The reason is that these women don't understand what is going on. And I don't know if you've ever been in that position where you've had your body just kind of go crazy on you and you don't know how to control it. It's very scary.
I'm not a woman, and I don't identify as a woman, Sue, in case you were wondering.
I never questioned that. Never.
That's all right. Well,
I identify as a woman.
Sue, if they don't.
And I have gone through it.
I understand the comment you're making, but then they are not organized enough to walk into a hospital and say, I'm overwhelmed by this. I need to give my baby up. Can you make sure my baby is given a home? You're organized enough to go to a baby box located in emergency services, but not enough to walk inside and hand the baby to a real human being?
You know what? Until you've actually been there and feel like you're going crazy, you don't know how difficult it is to actually go into a hospital and say, I need help. It's a whole different. I've known several people that have been down this road, and it's a whole different story.
By the way, can I ask you something? Do you know of any woman who produced this baby all by herself?
You can do it through artificial insemination, I guess.
Well, I guess you could, but I would hope that somebody who did it through artificial insemination actually wanted the baby. What I'm asking about is, when you let mom anonymously drop the baby in a box, what about dad? Does dad have anything to say about where this child ends up?
I would think in most cases where women do this, there's not a dad in the picture, because if the dad...
Well, there has to be a dad somewhere in the picture, Sue. I know that much. I may not be a biologist like Ketanji Brown Jackson says she's not a biologist, but I do know there had to be a dad at some point, didn't there?
At some point, yes. But I'm thinking the women who usually end up doing this are women who are on their own that don't have family support, and the father is no longer in the picture, may not even know she was pregnant.
But how does he know?
How does he know?
And does he have a right? I mean, women have all these rights.
He does
the father have a right to have a say?
You know what? That's a whole different issue. How she got pregnant.
Not if you drop the baby anonymously in a box and dispose of it, and there's no way for dad to ever find out what happened to his baby, because that baby is his baby as much as it's hers, isn't it?
Yeah, but you're getting off track here. This is
no. I'm dealing with a baby, and babies are only made by two people, not one.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about how the baby was made and how it got there. I'm talking about the mother and the emotional hormone reaction to giving birth. And what
I'm asking is if there is a woman who's gone hormonally crazy, does the father of that child have any say about where the baby ends up? That's the question I want to know the answer to.
The Lars Larson Show.
Ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Well, the U.S. Forest Service, as we've talked about on this show in years gone by, has a plan to save spotted owls. And what they plan to do is slaughter a whole bunch of other owls that seem, more ready for prime time. I don't know what the right biological way to describe it is, but I used to think that all those environmentalist types, they tended to be pagans who didn't believe in anything except maybe evolution. And I would have thought that they'd have said, well, if the spotted owl is not capable of surviving and some other owl displaces it, that's just evolution. That's just Mother Nature at work. But they've apparently decided that it's okay to slaughter up to 500,000 owls over about the next 20 years. That is the plan. And it sounds like the Trump administration is trying to bring that plan to an end. So I wanted to get Matt Hill on, who's executive director of the Douglas Timber Operators. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
So if I got any of that terribly wrong, please correct it for my audience. I'm open to corrections, but it sounds kind of crazy to me to say, we've decided the spotted owl is more worthy, so we're going to go out and have the government slaughter 500,000 of the other owls, the barred owls, because the barred owls are more capable and more survival worthy, and they tend to prey on the spotted owls, so it's government's job to go slaughter enough of one to make the other one prosper. Did I get that wrong?
Not entirely, but there are a couple of different things happening here. The management of barred owls as an effort to recover the northern spotted owl is under the jurisdiction of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And there have been legislative efforts to change that plan. It failed in the U.S. Senate by a floor vote last week. And that plan is integrated into the federal timber program, both for the BLM and the Forest Service in Western Oregon as part of the Northwest Forest Plan. What the Forest Service is doing is revising, amending the Northwest Forest Plan, which is how they manage the trees and species within the forest, not so much the barred owl.
Okay, fair enough. Let's talk about that because I've been an unabashed fan of logging. I'd like to see us log the federal forests of the United States and replant them, as I think has been required for more than half a century, almost three-quarters of a century. They've required that if you're going to cut the trees down, you've got to replant them. What's wrong with doing that, and is the Forest Service going to get back to a time where we can actually log millions and millions of acres and replant them and produce both, you know, wealth and jobs and tax revenue for America?
I wish it were that simple, and it could be. I mean, timber is our greatest resource in Oregon. It's a source not only of revenue but of clean air, water, wildlife habitat. It's a wonderful thing that we have here in Oregon that many places elsewhere in the country don't. The challenge is that federal forests in Western Oregon within the range of the northern spotted owl, which is an ESA-listed species, are still under the management strategy laid out by President Bill Clinton in 1994 called the Northwest Forest Plan. And so what the Forest Service has been doing for a couple of years now is looking at possible changes to that that plan largely for the first time since its inception in 1994. Now, if you remember back then when Bill Clinton came to Portland and he had his big summit and brought everyone in to talk about, you know, a new direction to get both timber harvest happening, but also protections for owls and other types of forest critters, the idea was to have a predictable and sustainable level of timber harvest. And that just hasn't happened. And in the meantime, the barred owl has come in and decimated the spotted owl. In the meantime, hundreds and thousands of acres have been decimated by wildfire, catastrophic wildfire, and neither of those things were really contemplated in the 1994 Clinton plan. And so the Forest Service has to go back to the drawing table and figure out a different way forward.
Well, and in fact, the reason I see kind of a coincidence of the two, and tell me if I'm completely off base, but my argument would be if you log the forest on a regular basis, cut the trees down and replant them, you have considerably less chance of massive devastating fires. And there's a forest scientist I talk to regularly, Dr. Bob Zyback, who says we had from about 1957 to the late 1980s, we had a third of a century with no major fires at all. I think the biggest one was one fire of 100,000 acres. And these days, we regularly anticipate 500,000 acres burning every single year in a good year. And the bad years, you burn north of 1,000,000. And you say, well, hold on. If the approach to the owl is, let's slaughter a bunch of one kind of owl to make the other owl prosper, because we should manage that problem. My approach would be, let's do the same thing with trees. Let's go out and cut the trees down. Except that in the case of slaughtering owls, you get nothing out of it. In the case of cutting trees down and replanting them, you get a brand new forest plus a whole bunch of wood and some jobs.
Well, Bob Zyback is not wrong. In fact, he's right on the data in terms of there not being major fires in Western Oregon between the Tillamook burns and really the early 2000s when we regularly see huge fires that are very devastating. And what we're seeing in those fires on federal land is that they're disproportionately impacting these areas that the Clinton plan set aside for spotted owl. There's more acres burned in those areas. Those acres burn at a higher intensity than in managed stands. So you're right. The data clearly shows that fire is less intensive and less pervasive in managed areas. In addition to that, when fire burns in these reserved areas for owls and other species, the dead standing timber is left to rot and reburn. And so when fire reenters those areas, which it always does, the fires are worse, they're harder to fight, and far more cataclysmic. And so we're in this downward spiral where we're beginning to see these areas burn and reburn until there's nothing left. And that's not good for our timber economy. It's not good for the air. And it's certainly not good for the species that these areas were originally set aside to protect. And so it's a failure across the board, no matter what your value is for a national forest.
You know, Matt, I was around when they had that forest summit. I was a reporter then. But I remember they said, well, we've got this plan. The problem is everybody at the table agrees to the plan. But all the other groups out there, all the other so-called environmentalists, are free to go to court and contest everything you want to do. So they enforce the part they like. And then they oppose the part they don't like, which is any logging at all. Did I get that one wrong?
You did not get that wrong. The Northwest Forest Plan did not slow litigation or appeal. It probably accelerated it because the plan is very complex. It requires surveys of non-ESA listed species, hundreds of them, every time you want to do management in certain types of stands. And so it's harder for forest managers to do the job, even though they only have 20% of landscape to manage timber on. So the plan has to be simplified, get back to basics, and be honest about the real threats to the spotted owl and to old growth, which is fire. And until you do something about fire, it doesn't matter. You can argue about logging all you want. It doesn't matter because we're burning far more acres and habitat through catastrophic fire than we ever did through any logging at any point in history.
The ultimate renewable resource. That is Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators. We'll be back in a moment. We got to talk to your, I'm going to get to your phone calls and emails, but I want to tell you how the BBC seriously misinformed people about the things Donald Trump said before the 2020 election.
Lars finally agree with Chuck Schumer?
Of course there's some wasteful spending, but you don't use a meat axe and cut everything.
Pass out the chainsaws and welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday live on the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. Let's start with John. Hey, John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Well, hello.
Hello.
Yes,
what's on your mind, John?
I was just calling to inform Yamhill County and the city of McMinnville about their transparent ballots. And I've been working on this for about 2 or 3 weeks now. Right around the 21st, I believe, I shined a light through my ballot. And all of a sudden, I could see my vote. And I could read all of the text inside of my ballot. So I got alarmed with that. And I contacted a couple of people, Yamhill County Clerk for one and someone else. And the... You know, I didn't get a response from either. So the next day, I kind of wondered about it. So I called down to the Yamhill County Clerk, and she was, I sent her an email with pictures about this thing.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, there was just a flurry of activity about something I didn't report. They were going on about a hole in an envelope. I never mentioned the hole in the envelope.
No, we've talked about the hole in the envelope in various elections where it allows you to see how somebody voted. In any case, it's not a very good security system for the ballots, is it?
Exactly.
What would you like them to
do? They took away these security sleeves, so you can actually see directly through these votes. I mean, and this being a mail-in ballot,
yep.
I mean, it'd be fine if it was all drop-off, and everybody dropped it off in their boxes.
Well, I'm not sure you're right about that, John, and I'll tell you why. You drop the mails, the ballots in the box. Are you assuming that nobody within the system is going to take a look and say, you know, we could lose that whole box of ballots that seems to be all Republican votes or all conservative votes or all votes for one candidate or another candidate? That's you're assuming that nobody within that system has political motivation, aren't you?
I'm just, sorry to say that this ballot is transparent. You can see everything through it. And so I've been on the phone and I got the Secretary of State involved. And it was
Tobias Reed. Good luck with that.
I know. And it was 25434 and it got denied. And I tried to appeal and they said there was no appeal process. So now I'm looking at, I've got a case filed with the Circuit Court of the state of Oregon here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be, serving
But let me ask you something, John. In most lawsuits, you ask for a resolution of some kind, a remedy. What would be the remedy at this point if you've got transparent ballot envelopes in an election? What would the remedy be? Assume I was the judge. You'd say, Judge Larson, here's what I want you to do. How would you solve it?
I would say, oh, my gosh. Can we audit this November 4th election? And could we have a reversal of the SOS, the state of, Secretary of State decision on 25434? Could there also be?
How does that solve the problem? Do you just have to do the election over and then do it with different ballots and different envelopes?
I would say put the security sleeve back in.
I think that's a great idea, and I appreciate the call, John. Let's go to George, who's a naysayer. Hey, George, what do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Hi there, Lars. Well, I think the baby box is not such a terrible idea. It's basically just one more step that leads to an adoption process, and it's much more better than the system that the Democrats were heading toward. The Democrats actually, I think there was a governor that was suggesting that parents should be able to kill their babies, I think, up to 3 months after they had them. I can't remember his name, but it was really popular.
How does the baby box solve that? It was Ralph Northam.
Alive.
Who was governor of Virginia, who is also a medical doctor, who said that you should be able to kill your baby up to days after the baby was born. How does the baby box solve that?
Well, the baby box allows the baby to be adopted rather than be killed.
Except that if, in the case of Northam and all these Democrats who want parents to be able to have an abortion before birth and an abortion after birth, their people aren't going to put their baby in a box. They're going to kill their baby. Right?
What if the woman had the baby and she's putting it in the box? She's obviously not killing her baby.
No, I know that. But they're two different groups of people. There's one group of people who say, I have a right to kill the baby, whether the baby is born or even immediately after the baby is born. That's one group. Then there's the other group saying, I don't know what to do with this baby, but I had him, and I want to give him up for adoption. So they drop him in a box, which I think are two separate issues, not the same at all. Let's go to Michael. Hey, Michael, you're also a naysayer. What do we disagree about? Michael? Michael?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes.
What do we disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
I agree with the baby drop box. I'm not a naysayer.
Okay. See, I don't agree with it. I think it's a terrible idea that suggests that getting rid of a baby is because a baby is disposable. Just drop him in the box. Somebody else will take care of him. You think that's okay?
No. But my twist on it is that she's able to do it at a business, not a box, and in exchange for her getting a procedure done that makes it so she can't get pregnant anymore.
Well, now you're wishful thinking, because do you think that's ever going to happen? That the Democrats would ever agree with saying, well, if you give up a baby like that, you can never have a baby again? Good luck getting that one through any legislature, because it'd be opposed by the liberals who believe in abortion. It'd be opposed by conservatives like me who believe in life. So you've got almost the perfect measure that will be opposed by both the right and the left simultaneously.
Okay.
I mean, that's my read on what would happen if you were to propose that. Now, Michael, I will tell you something that a lady did, and this was a lady who did this, we had her on the show about 20-plus years ago. She kept taking in foster kids, she and her husband, and she finally said to one of the sheriff's deputies, kept bringing these kids in the middle of the night, where are these kids coming from? You know, can I go meet the mothers? And the deputy said, they're all coming from the same mom. And she said, how's that happening? She said, well, she's a prostitute and a drug addict, and she's producing babies. And the mom, the foster mom said, well, maybe we could persuade her not to get pregnant again. So she went to the mom and said, look, if I give you a couple of $100, would you get your tubes tied? And I'll pay for the tubes getting tied as well. And the mom, the prostitute, said, yeah, for a couple of $100, I'll do it. So this foster mom did it with that mom, but it was a voluntary thing. The mom had to say, yeah, I'll get my tubes tied, then I won't get pregnant anymore. I can work as a prostitute more regularly. And that's what apparently she did. That foster mom went on to raise money privately to go down and talk to women who kept producing babies, often babies that were drug addicted or drug affected, and talk them into getting their tubes tied. And as long as they did it voluntarily, both conservatives and liberals had no problem with it, because they said, well, the mom can decide to get her tubes tied, and if you offer to pay for it to make it more attractive and maybe even give her a couple of $100, there's nothing wrong with that. And that was an actual solution to a problem, one of the few I've ever heard of. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Senator John Kennedy with some advice to Schumer and Hakeem.
Chuck and Hakeem need to go to Amazon, buy some testicles, and stand up to the moon wing of their party.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. Well, a Clinton-appointed judge has blocked Donald Trump from defunding states out of the 50, 58 if you're an Obama voter, that teach gender ideology in schools during Transgender Awareness Week. Are activist judges turning the bench into a kind of super school board? I thought we'd test that notion on Sherry Few, who is president and founder of United States Parents Involved in Education. Ms. Few, welcome back.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Would you mind telling my audience just how much gender ideology gets thrust upon students that parents are foolish enough to send to government-run schools in America?
Oh, it is blatant. It is everywhere. I have seen examples of curriculum in kindergarten where children are being taught that they could be a boy or a girl or whatever they think they might be. Very young ages, they're being indoctrinated with what I think is evil, but is obviously not factual. No science supports it. And indeed, parents are very foolish these days if they have their children enrolled in government school, because this is what they're up to.
Now, look, I encourage parents when they can. I went to public schools. My wife went to public schools. My granddaughter is homeschooled. I think that's a lot more sensible. That may or may not be realistic for a lot of parents out there. I'd love to see the government-run public schools that we send so many billions of dollars to. I'd love to see them reformed. But I've kind of just about given up hope that we can get that reform without removing the influence of labor unions. But now we've got this Clinton-appointed judge that has blocked the administration from revoking sex education grants from states that include gender ideology. That seemed like a good start to say, okay, the federal government isn't sending you money for this stuff anymore. And now a judge says, no, he has more authority than Donald Trump does.
Yeah, so the president, you know, he issued an executive order declaring that we federally need to recognize only two genders. So all the federal government has given this order that's the law now, but that's set through executive order. So when he refused to provide funding to the states that would not comply, then he withheld their teen, it's teen pregnancy prevention funding, by the way.
Yeah.
It's under that auspice. The Department of Health and Human Services issues money to states through grant programs. And what they do with the grants is they write in what they want them to teach. So if you're going to respond to a competitive grant, you're going to write it the way they want you to write it if you want to gain the award. So they slip in these things where they require, you know, nefarious things that we wouldn't, that really have no relationship to teen pregnancy prevention. But this is how they're getting this garbage in. It's being paid for with our tax dollars. And anytime, you know, a Democrat is in that office and he is appointing the head of Health and Human Services, they have been doing this all along. And I know from experience, because I used to write abstinence education grants. And even though the federal funding was for abstinence, they would put in language in there that we would have to respond to favorably in order to be competitive in the award. So things that abstinence would have nothing to do with, you know, things like how would you ensure that gay people would also be addressed by your program. You know, they would put all those requirements in there and then score you according to your responses. So the Democrats have been doing this. So now we've got Donald Trump saying, no, we can't do this. And 16 Democrat states and the District of Columbia filed a lawsuit with a judge, like you mentioned, a Clinton appointee in Oregon, of course, of all states. And of course, this judge is taking it on himself, and there's a preliminary injunction withholding the fact. Well, they'll continue to get their money, actually, is what will happen.
I mean, even though every other administration has been able to say, we're going to take a teen pregnancy reduction program, and that's what Congress voted the money for, and then we're going to use it to do something that has nothing to do with reducing teen pregnancy, pushing a gender ideology. And as to how you'd address it with gay teenagers, if you've got two gay guys, isn't it enough to say you can't get pregnant? Or two lesbian girls? You can't. Yeah. I mean, just like Ketanji Brown Jackson, I'm not a biologist, but I think I understand that part of it.
Right. And so as abstinence providers, back when I was writing grants, it was logical for us to say, We're telling all children not to have sex. So it doesn't matter whether they, you know, profess to be gay or whatever. We're saying don't have sex. So, yeah, and it's teen pregnancy. It's always been that's the umbrella of that and HIV. We don't hear much about HIV anymore, but when I was involved with abstinence education, you know, that was the push. That's why you had to teach kids how to wear condoms, because otherwise they're going to die from HIV, and we don't want them getting pregnant. And that's the excuse that they've used over decades to actually get education in the schools that teaches kids how to have sex. It's not about preventing anything.
No, so what happens at this point? I mean, for the most part, Donald Trump's record in the lower courts is abysmal, because most of the folks who are bringing these cases will judge shop. And they'll say, let's bring in this jurisdiction. We're likely to get a good result, say, out of the West Coast. We won't bring it in places like Texas. But they also know that when those cases get to the Supreme Court, I think Trump's win record there is, I think, 17 out of 19 cases. He wins routinely. So the Supreme Court is routinely saying, yeah, all those lower court judges, they don't know what they're talking about.
Right. And so, you know, that's the good thing here. And we've seen a pattern of it. You know, these liberal judges, again, like you say, they're judge shopped in these very liberal states like Oregon. And so they're preventing and stalling his actions temporarily. But the good thing is, and it really is good, that it advances to the Supreme Court because they're the highest court in the land and they set precedent. So these types of things will be solved, you would think, for years to come with that precedent.
Okay, so where do we go from this? And is there any way for parents to actually get some satisfaction? I mean, some parents feel they're caught in the government schools, that they don't have the resources, whether it's finance or time or anything else, to be able to replace that education so their kids go to government schools. I mean, I'd like them to all have the option of using the same public resources to fund private education for their kids. But until we get to that point, what are parents supposed to do?
Well, I get asked this question a lot, and you know, I've been in education policy for some time, and I even do a podcast, Unmasking Government Schools with Sherry Few, and I can tell you that in the last 10 years particularly, it has become so toxic that there's no way a parent can leave their child in the government schools. They have to find ways. They have to find ways that they can afford alternatives, make sacrifices, because we're talking about evil and serious harm being done to children. I mean, if children get into this transgender thing, you know, by the time they're a teenager, then they could be getting hormones and even recommended surgery behind their parents' backs. In some states, the children can be taken away from the parents. Parents cannot risk this. So they have to find ways, and there are some alternatives. There are you know, we don't support vouchers because we believe that once government money gets into private and homeschooling, they're going to control all education. But there are some ideas floating. We've been involved with promoting tax credits for parents, and we've written some proposals on that. We're supporting some legislation in Congress where we think where they're going to shut down the Department of Ed, and we think the money returned to the states, a portion of it should be tax credits to parents. So that way it's not government money going into the private and home schools, but parents are able to keep more of their own money in order to choose the alternatives that they need for their children.
That's a good idea. That's Sherry Few with the United States Parents Involved in Education. Glad to be with you. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. By the way, just got word of a major plane crash at the airport in Louisville, Kentucky. You'll get details at the top of the hour. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Tim Walz, proving fashion really is political.
Think of how easy it would be to be a damn Republican. What should I wear today? This stupid freaking red hat.
Now, with his red hat, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and I'm glad to be with you. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. We've been serving the Pacific Northwest states for the last almost 30 years now, providing honestly provocative talk on a regular daily basis. This segment of the show is brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists at Oregon Medical Centers. And our ex-poll question today, are baby drop boxes a great idea or a sign that in America, life has become disposable? I would vote for the latter rather than the former. I think that you're telling people, if you don't want a baby, just drop it in a box. Somebody will take care of it. You have no responsibility whatsoever. I think that's a crazy idea. Today's X-Poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let me go to Ron in Salem. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Can you drop a deer in my box truck, please? I'm trying to get one. But nevertheless, Lars, the situation I'm concerned about, sir, is the guy that's the illegal alien that was put on the health boards and everything else.
Oh, that guy.
Yes, Mr. Garcia, you know, in my opinion, Lars, when I own state government and I call them the cookie monsters of the Marxist society, that'd be Senator Manning and Senator Patterson's, because I went and testified against them getting this universal health care board, and I think that he's attached to. We need
he
to
is.
Follow. I respect request that Bondi will follow the money and see if there's any backdoor money going back to these nonprofits, whether it's through that group that he was charged to, and going back to his campaign money or whatever to these candidates in Oregon, and let's go after him like we would go after the mob, funneling the judges and everything. Doing.
I would love to see that happen, Ron, because I'll tell you what makes me a bit more suspicious. Just to tell you what Ron's talking about here, there's a guy by the name of Juan Pablo Villalobos Garcia, or Villalobos Garcia, I guess you could say. He is, among other things, an illegal alien from Venezuela. He is illegally in the United States. He has no right to work. He has a rap sheet that includes 3 counts of sex abuse, a conviction for 3 counts of sex abuse, and for bestiality, and for failure to register as a sex offender. He's also been serving as the head of a private nonprofit, a 501c3, the Latinx Recovery Center, but he also serves on some state health care advisory boards about how to get to universal health care. And so it makes me wonder, they say it's actually valuable that he has expertise and lived experience as an illegal alien. Unbelievable. Let's go to Joe. Hey, Joe, it's Tuesday on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Oh, hey, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Larry. Good talking to you. Hey, so I want to talk about the passing and the legacy of Richard R. Cheney.
Yeah.
I think that he made a huge impact on the life of America and kind of the bad situation we're at right now. And I think it's safe to say, looking back over what the 20 years, 22, 23 years, that this was an example of one side of the political discourse being proven completely correct and the other side being
okay, on what
wrong.
Issue? On what issue? Because I wasn't a big fan of
Dick Cheney,
still
I'm
not, and
war,
don't like
know?
His daughter at all. So,
right. So anyhow, I mean, Dick Cheney lied his butt off and got a whole bunch of American service people killed because he obviously lied.
You're talking about the war in Iraq, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You've got to tell that to the audience. I want my audience to understand what you're talking about.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm just a little bit nervous.
No worries.
So anyhow, so I obviously I'm bringing this up because I was on the opposition to that war back in 2002, 2003. And I believe we even talked via email about that subject during the time. I guess what I'm getting at is the passing of Richard R. Cheney is a good chance for everybody to look back and reflect that sometimes the people we disagree with, vehemently with, turn out to be correct in this particular example. It was the radical, extreme, American-hating left that was indeed proven out to be correct about the lies of Richard R. Cheney, amongst others. And so that's not to say that the left is correct at this particular juncture. I think that the football of truth is like a baton. And sometimes the left wing's got the baton of truth, and the right wing looks really stupid, to be honest with you. And now we have the times now when the right wing has the baton of truth, and then the left looks
okay,
really absolutely horrible.
Just out of curiosity, we've got about a minute. What is the left right about today?
Nothing.
That's my impression as well, is that they've chosen, they call these 80-20 issues. And Trump has taken the 80% end of every single one of them. And the Democrats are overholding the 20% end, and they're floundering.
Okay. So hold me on after this, and we can have a
no, you're going to you're gonna have to finish it up. You've got about 20 seconds.
Moment, at this particular moment, the right is correct. but the right has been completely incorrect, deathfully to their own children's sake, before.
Okay, and you should before, not be but let me ask you something. Why can't the left bring itself to say, the president is right about illegal aliens? The president is right about the war. Why not?
And why can't, and they should, but also the right should be able to say, hey, you know what, back in the 1990s, when jury followed...
Lars,